the summertime is coming, and the trees are sweetly blooming, and the wild mountain time.
Hello and welcome to episode 30 of Keith and Scruff Collective. To play there, this episode is about growing. We have the craft fairy and the Scotch segment. I've got the news, the hellos, a lightning what the collective have been up to. I've got a review of the Gansey Workshop by Elizabeth Lovick. And I'm sponsored by my own business, www.energyhunt.com. I'd also like to say happy Easter to everybody that celebrates it. And happy whatever it is that you do if you don't. And I'll let you have all the links in the show notes that come with the place that you download this from. So relax, get the links later. Now get your cup of tea and your craft, and I'll tell you what crack is in Caithness this week.
Now for the blather.
The blather. Growing. Well, I've taken a departure from the Mr. Men series for a while. As I said last episode, I was out gardening and it got me to thinking about growing things. Spring is all around me now, our daffodils are in full bloom, the lambs are popping out left, right and centre, a swallow has been spotted in Caithness, and the geese have flown north. Not even a goodbye or see you in winter time. But haste ye back, geeses, you are bonny to look at. The definition of growth from a dictionary is, noun, the process of increasing in physical size. I'm sorry, I have no Sandy here telling you about the Mr. Men. That bit was one of my favourite parts, as I waited for him to say, well, mummy, but he'll be back with the segment names. He is important, though, because Sandy has just had a growth spurt, and, well, I'm needing to get him new trousers. Daisy has a lovely wooden growth chart in her bedroom, with photos of the family and their names and dates on it, and Goldilocks and the three bears. A bit like Andy does in Toy Story 3. Aye, guess what I've been watching again, and again, and again. I still quite like it. Well, we want our bairns to grow big and strong, and we feed them healthy food as we can get them to eat. There is the growing of a family, not mine, as it is perfect, but Queen Elizabeth II. I refer, of course, to Prince William and Kate Middleton's wedding on the 29th of April. I wish them all the best, and our school has made them a present, which is really nice, because we have got close links with Prince Charles through the Castle of May, and we do get quite a bit of support from them through Christmas cake every year and countless trips to the castle for the bairns. So it was nice to give something back to them. Also, the bairns are having a pretend wedding at the school, and I think that they're watching it on the TV too. I'm not a massive royalist myself. I tell you, I wouldn't have their life for all the tea in China, but I do question the lavishness of the occasion when the country's in an economical difficult times. The policing of the event alone is running into millions and billions if you take into the account for lost time for businesses, as we've all been granted an extra public holiday. Aye, thanks, Queenie. I've got a small business. Not that I grudge giving our lovely graduate a day off. It is a day where we could really do with not having to have an extra holiday paid for by me. Anyway, before you all turn me off, I do wish them all well, and I hope that they have a long and happy marriage. Kids, reigning over us, etc, etc. Just don't forget the little man that put you there in the first place. But from a craft point of view, I do want to see her flowers and of course her bridal gown, which I expect will be exquisite, with the embroidery and the material. A wedding can be an explosion of crafting, from the invitations to the favours to the table decorations to the veil. Plus, who among the knitting community has not heard or seen the Knit Your Own Royal Wedding pattern book currently selling on Amazon for £6? I love the Queen, and I think Camilla's wee dolly is actually better than the reality. Graham Norton pointed out the fact that Kate Middleton's arms are actually really long on the dolly. Someone in Funnyland has knitted these and made a YouTube video of them, which of course I have the address for on the show links. And the admin have been at it again, making a spoof video for the royal family coming into the church dancing to The House of Love by East 17. And it will make you laugh and smile, and I really wish they would bounce up the aisle like that. It would liven the whole thing up. So I've got the show link for that as well. I actually think that Electric Sheep has referred to these this week, so I've not listened to hers yet, but I apologise if it sounds like I have. I will dedicate this week's song to them as Sowing the Seeds of Love by Tears for Fears, and I hope your day is all you want it to be and you don't get lost in the pizzazz surrounding it. There you go. I'm nice. Right, back to the garden, planting and growing. I'm loving our polytunnel just now. The seeds we planted are being brought on just now as I wanted, and very soon will need to be transplanted and then planted outside. I've got a schedule of when I'm planting so the harvest does not all arrive at once, and I'm trying to time it so the hard frosts are well past. It's a bit of a gamble unless you go by the old Scottish saying, never cast a clout until May is out, which your old granny would tell you not to take your vest off until June is in, because it can be a bit cold until then. Well, May can actually lead us into a false sense of security, and we often get a lovely couple of weeks' weather, as it's normally when the poor high school bairns have their exams. Myself, I remember very well sitting studying in the garden. If that is you, study hard and it will be worth it. Yeah, I know, you're thinking, aye, right, but, well, it is. And you'll only know that when you get to my age. But I was planting yet more seeds, and this time it was courgettes. I was thinking how it related to craft. When you want to start a new project, what is it that plants the seed of creativity in your brain? Yeah, you may have a need for a new jumper, as the last one is worn out or doesn't match the wardrobe you have, or you simply have to have that pattern. But you still need the ounce of spirit for, well, what colour, what shape, what texture, what fit do I want? Most of us love this part of planning. Thinking about it, looking for the pattern inspiration, specific materials to match the idea. I would actually go as far as to say that although I love knitting and knitters, don't hate me here, I think that the creativity is actually easier to express when doing a textile art piece or simply just an art piece, more because I feel that there's an endless scope of materials, sizing, techniques and shaping. It's not that you can't do amazing things with knitting, but I just think that textile art you can do a little bit more. For instance, my big project from last year, and I couldn't have done the same scope of project in knitting to encompass so many different techniques without it looking too busy, but I can do that with textiles. We have the seed of creativity planted here. The warmth and some water germinates the seed, and it starts to grow. Hobby is the most impatient person here when it comes to germination, and that's when you have to remember, don't worry, it will grow. Here, I'll bring you back to knitting. You can be on the rib for ages and ages and ages. That's just me, and well, ages. And all of a sudden you measure it and, oh, excellent, it's time for a new stitch. Or do you start the cable, or you decrease. Just something new. So your seedlings have sprouted and you're now ready to be transplanted into bigger pots. So they have room to grow, which is often where you change your needle size or your quilt blocks to be put together. And then you can have a bit of weeding to take care of the cutting of the grass. This can liken itself to the mid part of the project. You're halfway up the back, or you're casting on the sleeves, but not yet at the interesting neckline. Or in the quilt, you're doing the putting together part, and it can be a bit laborious halfway through any art project. Also, the time when you rip something back because you've made a wee mistake. This leads me to a conversation that I had with Scrappy-Doo. Can you mind when I said, I wonder if she knew Scooby-Doo? Well, she did message me to say hello, and that actually Scrappy-Doo had nothing to do with Scooby-Doo. Everything to do, it's all the doo-doo-doos here, with taking back a project and scrapping it and making it a Scrappy-Doo. And I said, I thought it was quite brave to rip something out. And I was in the process of ripping back the brioche hat, which is, yeah, still ripped out, before you ask, no mention anymore. And I asked her to what point you decide it's just not worth it. And this was her reply. I was pretty far along in the project, but I didn't like the way it looked. It was a scarf that had holes knitted into it. You had to crochet around the little openings, and I was done the knitting, but I hated how the openings looked. I think I actually threw it out when I reorganised my knitting life a few years ago. I also took some projects that were in hibernation and ripped them out at that time. I have been pondering your question, and I think that a project has the potential to become a Scrappy-Doo when 1. It is not working out, bad directions, you are mentally not into it, or it's not what you're expecting. 2. The project starts to suck out your life force. 3. Becomes frustrating or just not fun anymore. Or 4. You've ripped it out multiple times and you decide to quit while you're ahead. I think it's traumatic to rip out or abandon a project at any time, but I feel relieved when I make my project a Scrappy-Doo. I made peace and I moved on. It's almost as if once you Scrappy-Doo it, you are relieved of any further responsibility towards said project. And then she says, I think this is excellent subject matter because I'd asked her if I could use it in the podcast. So thank you for letting me see that. But I do think it's a brave thing to do when you invest time in something and it's really hard to walk away from it. Even, as she said, it's sucking the life force out of you. Next time you're ripping back or cutting the grass, it's now to refer to as a Scrappy-Doo. And well done you for making the decision. I sound really patronising there. But no, well done. So then you start to see the flowers are forming. This is inclusive of fruit and vegetables here. Pea pods being my favourite. This could be where you're seeing the garment forming and you know you haven't got too much more to go. Finally, the flower turns. If it's beautiful lilies, you can cut them and have them arranged in a vase. Or they just grace you with their presence for a while and enhance your environment. Of course, harvest time is very busy picking the vegetables and using them or storing them for through the winter. There's nothing like the first pick of tatty straight from the garden onto your plate. It's a right smug, self-satisfying feeling that, well, I allow myself for. Normally I'd hoard these kinds of traits. Yeah. This is the part where you've finished the garment. You've sewn the buttons on, you've cast it off, blocked it, pressed it, and then you're wearing it. Then the butter on top of the tatties is when somebody gives you a well-earned compliment. Did you make that? Yes, I did. It's beautiful. Thank you. Your seeds have come to fruition, and you've seen it through the frost, the weeds, the water and the harvest, and now you get the splendour in all its glory. Enjoy your butter, though. Okay, warning, if you need a pee stop, then come back after, because it's time for the Deasy Laugh. So, to the Craft Fairy segment.
Craft Fairy.
I was delighted to be the Craft Fairy this week. I had my wings on and I posted away Paris Phone's yarn, a letter to America to LP Star, some roving to Granny G, and the Mother Bears to Acanthus. And in that package, I included a ball of the North Ronaldsay yarn I bought from Orkney last year. She's a very kind soul who thinks of others, and I wanted to give her something back and something local to me. When I get good at spinning, then maybe I can send her some of my handspun, but until then, it's Orcadian. That's as local as I could get. And also, when you give, you get in return. And I received a package with much thanks from Acanthus. There really wasn't any need. I did love opening it. And then there was a skein of three Irish girls' Kells Sportweight in Brana colour whey. I spent rather a lot of time deciding that I think it's going to be socks. When I start making socks, but that's what I'm going to start with. And also some beautiful hand-painted rose marled notebook cards and a couple of other things as well. I also gifted some handspun green fibre to my friend Sarah. So please carry on putting your photos of your projects on the Ravelry group section as I still look at them. And send in the warmest of Gatewell wishes to Fiddly Sticks on Twitter, who has had some dental stuff going on. And also my friend Kirsten in Aberdeen, who was getting her wisdom teeth sorted. And I wondered, does that mean that they steal the wisdom from her, and who do they give it to? Did she have any in the first place? It's okay, she doesn't listen. Is there a wisdom shop? Hello section. Hello to Will Bothy and Rachel H, who have joined the group in Ravelry. I love the chat, your project pages. Always dancing with the little messages, so keep them coming. Keep up the drive-by friending too. I had a wee look through my old messages when I was looking for an address and I thought I would just randomly say hello. Pooh, Spinning Lil, Carrot Trike, Lazy Loop, Bob Magoo, Good Girl Saturday, Taffovile, Dundernit, Harry Horror, Angora, Vendor D and Spring Fairy. Just because. I love it when my name gets mentioned in another podcast, so hello to you and thank you for listening. Hello to the new Twitters. Tweet me, I'll say hello and I'll tweet back. I love the banter on there still. What's crack section?
What's the e-crack section?
Well, I hope you all had a good wee looky at Granny G's Entangled e-zine. She now has a group on Ravelry too, and she's very kindly offered me a preview copy of her e-zine, which is kind of her, and I'm paying her back in Jacob Roving. And this is good because it means when I get sent it, you can all be reminded that it's coming up to go check it out and get your subscription sorted. Mother Bear Project. Our mother bears are now stateside and pretty much on their way to the Bairns. So thank you to Angela Campbell, Will Bothy and Rachel for them, and also Acanthus for organising it. I was on the Podcaster Workshop last week and it was superb. It was hosted by Creative High and run by Dabster Production Company from Edinburgh. They've made some excellent podcasts from The Guardian and The Stand Comedy Club, to name a few. I have links to these for you and you can get them from iTunes or from their website. I listened to all the Stand ones while shovelling half a ton of stone chippings to make a path around the polytunnel, and I laughed and I laughed and I laughed. The favourite joke was the Lucy Porter one. The main presenter, Richard, is a good guy. And that's in capital G's. I'd like to say hello to Richard, Sean the Techno Ninja, Olivia, who's a knitter, Amanda from Creative High, Bob and Richard from Caithness FM, and Veronica, who were on the course with me. And they were on to a winner with me due to the fact that I listened to comedy podcasts anyway. And I'd actually listened to the Amnesty International one already, and I thought, sounds familiar, I'm sure I've listened to that. In fact, I remember where I was when I listened to that. The podcast workshop, we went out and we interviewed the surfing community, because remember I said it was to do the surfing competition. And Dave Mailman from O'Neill gave us an interview, and he was a top guy, with a capital T and a capital G. Very easy to speak to, and very kind with his time. Also, Andrew Brain, who is a local surfer, he told us how he first learned to surf in Thurso. This didn't surprise me in the slightest, I can imagine this happening. He went out wearing his cut-off jeans, a Scotland goalie top, cycling gloves, some gutties on his feet. He went in for a couple of hours and they went straight to hot bath at his grandma's, who lives right beside the beach. But because of his influence and a few others, the O'Neill Championship is in Scotland. So mind I was saying, aye, they have the wedge in California, and we have Thurso Beach, but it's actually Thurso East. I was being ever so slightly sarcastic because I didn't realise how technically brilliant Thurso East actually is. And it's up there as one of the best weaves in the world. Seriously, it is. I live 10 miles away, so therefore it's mine. I mean, I knew they wouldn't come up for a competition for no reason, but well, your next pub quiz question that asks about surfing Cold Water Classic, you can say, yes, that's Thurso East, I think you'll find. I was really rather disappointed that not one of them said dude. The entire community were friendly and helpful, and we got some good interviews. We used some fantastic equipment, and I now have better software, and I hope I'm doing it justice. I did ask how much their digital recording devices, and they said, oh, a steal at £450. Now, remember, that's the tools of their trade, and it's understandable, but I'm not in that price bracket. But when the company makes its first million, I will treat us to one, though. But better than that, I made some new friendly contacts. I learned loads about editing, and I was rather pleased to learn that whilst I'm kind of actually doing what you're supposed to do in podcast land, pretty much. And they were amazed to hear that the knitting podcasts were so popular. And even more so when I told them my download figures. So thank you all for doing that, because it made them sit and actually listen to me. So we've got a great community for podcasts, both technical help and listener help, which does help enormously. Could I put help in that sentence anymore? I often read the threads on the Podcast Junkies group, and it helps me continually improve on this. I don't like negative criticism, but I think constructive criticism has its place. Just say it nicely, because I'll take the huff otherwise. The podcast we made will at some point will be available to stream on Creative High or Screen High's website, but it was nothing like this one, and I'll let you know when it's up. It really was an opportunity, and I cannot tell you exactly how much I got out of it, because I would be here all day. Back to the knitting. We have a report from Caroline of Spinning and Crafting Group about Elizabeth Lovick's Gansey Workshop, which was held on the 9th of April at Castle Hill Heritage Centre. Now, she writes that it was a sympathetically renovated old building which has always had an informal, welcoming and relaxing feel to it. Just the ticket for a trip into our local knitting history. I don't know what I was expecting, but as I made my way through the early morning fog, I began to wonder what had ever made me think that I, who can barely knit... What? She can't knit. She's talking nonsense here. Should attend any kind of masterclass. I decided I'd just enjoy the company in a day out. What a pleasant surprise. There were no Jean-Paul Gaultier or Zandra Rhodes lookalike floating around. There were several members of the spinning group, and the rest were from Thurso Knit and Blether Group. Then, of course, there was our Gansey knitting guru, Elizabeth Lovick of Northern Lace fame. www.northernlace.co.uk. A perfectly normal lady, a mine of information and teaching skills to die for. I asked if I could adopt her. Aww. Elizabeth began by showing us loads of old photos and pointing out detail that I've never noticed. She shared historical information based on her years of research, not just from museums and documents, but from talking to older people who remember details from earlier generations. We were also reminded that this knitting was not done for leisure, but out of necessity. Well, I don't know about you, but my image of a Gansey was one of a fisherman's jumper made of rectangles, mostly navy blue with some texture patterns made from fairly thin wool, with tiny stitches and even more tiny needles which would take forever and a day to make. So let the myth be dispelled. Apparently, yes, fishermen wore Gansies and some were navy blue, etc. However, even around Caithness and the Northern Isles, there was a huge variation, not just of the patterns, but in thickness, colour, shape, usage, and not just for fishing and not just for men, and even in the tension used. We saw photos of women herring gutters that modified the basic Gansey for themselves, in ways that you couldn't imagine. There was a photo of a Shetland cod fisherman in a marl Gansey, knitted from 3 strands of 5-ply. Could you imagine how thick that would be? There were examples of colour work. Men from Orkney often had short zips at the front of the neck. The list of unexpected variation goes on and on. It's believed that the word Gansey probably originates from several similar Scandinavian words which all basically mean a jumper. Any jumper. So after lots of blether, lots of questions, a homemade soup lunch, thank you Heritage Centre people, we were to look at the actual knitting details. We all set about designing a Gansey. Does that sound daunting? I thought so. But Elizabeth takes the approach that your knitting should be what you want it to be, as opposed to blindly following a pattern of what someone else wants. Personally, I found this both refreshing and liberating. I guess I was expecting to say, this is how you should do it. Elizabeth was making the point that we can all do what we want. There are no rights or wrongs as long as you're happy with the result. The how to design consisted of loads and loads of useful tips, with then thinking about what we'd like to do, then asking Elizabeth how on earth how we'd start to tackle it. She's remarkably patient. And one lady was wanting to discreetly knit letters into organza, another was knitting dolphin motifs, and Rachel, that's Knitting Kitten 04 to you, as you can imagine, was rocketing away with well-planned geometric design. I was busy trying to work how to get a ridge up the side of my fishtail, I didn't know Caroline had a fishtail, to accentuate the shape at the same time as discussing ease measurements. Everyone was doing something completely different. Wool was very kindly donated by www.guernseywool.co.uk. Thank you, Martine. And in the blink of an eye, it was time to go home. What a fantastic day. So I've got thanks, Caroline, for doing that report for us. I'm scunnered I missed it, but my hubby was on call for a job in Orkney. So that sounded like a really good day. And then Caroline had taken along her books, and in them it had the local patterns. And there's actually a pattern from Wick, and it's called the Wick pattern, which I thought was really cool. Anyway, coming up on the 21st of July, it's a wee bit away yet, near Oban in Benderloch in Argyll is a Gaelic Wool Fest. I was asked to bring this up, the Highland Knitwits group on Ravelry, and it says there'll be sheep shearing, spinning, singing from a Gaelic walking group, fleece and wool for sale, local food, and Senecar on Ravelry has all the details. I'll keep bringing this up until the event, but I thought you may wish to organise your holidays around it. I was asked to highlight this, which I'm more than happy to do, and for any other event that's coming up for you in Scotland. So it turns out that this Wool Fest in Benderloch is the farm beside Sandy's godfather's parental home. Small world, eh? I may get down to it myself. We're still working it out. Big up the blog section. This week I would like to mention www.hijallandhalo.blogspot.com, and I don't think that's how you said it, I meant to look it up, who is Jameson and Smith, and they run the Shetland Wool Shop on Shetland, as in the islands far, far north of here. And I've been following this blog for a wee while, and they talk about their business and how the wool is sent from Shetland Islands to Yorkshire to be scoured into the spinners and dyers and then sent north again as lovely yarn, and then they sell it on. And it's a fantastic inside look at a yarn company taking it from fleece to needles. They run courses in the shop, and the latest one at this time, Easter weekend 2001, has wet felted pieces. The second one down being my favourite, as the sheep actually looks like it's just about jumping you. So if you fancy a look around Shetland, look here for an idea of island life revolving around the yarn industry. They've also got a Shetland Wool Weekend in October. You can have a look about that. And you can buy their goods too from a link to www.shetlandwoolbrokers.co.uk. And they post worldwide, which is nice. I would like to do the wedding ring shawl, which is a 6 foot square one ply shawl in lace pattern. Yeah, so it probably won't. But when you start in the border, then you work inwards, and when you're finished, you're supposed to be able to thread it through your wedding ring, as they are that finely knitted. And I have seen one of these at Jenny's house, and she got it out and showed us, and it went through the wedding ring, and she got it for a present when one of our bairns was born, and it's now an heirloom. So go on, treat yourself. Back to the Scottish segment.
Scottish segment.
Robert the Bruce this week. Robert the Bruce was a distant descendant of David the First. Mind him that made his mummy a chapel at Edinburgh Castle. Yeah, him again. And Robert was pretty desperate to be king, so much that he stabbed his nearest rival John Combe and then got himself crowned at Scone. Yeah, that's very nice of you, Robert. So he had to go on the run, because you're not really supposed to go around stabbing people. And this is where the famous spider story happens. He was hiding in Ireland and he watched a spider try and try and try again to make a web, and legend has it this is where he got his inspiration to try again. Then he went a wee bit mental back in Scotland and he had a big fight in 1314, famously at Bannockburn Stirling, which finally got rid of the English in Scotland. In 1320, the Declaration of Arbroath was made, and this is where the Scottish Earls, Barons and the community of the realm sent a letter to Pope John the 22nd, declaring that Robert was the rightful monarch. History citates that the Declaration of Arbroath was more important than the battle at 1314. So Robert the Bruce had a son, David, who died without a child, and the sovereignty jumped to Robert the now second, grandson from Robert the Bruce, from his daughter Marjorie, and if it was her husband, Walter the Steward, that's with a D, which was Stuart with a T then. and then the sixth to hold that hereditary title. The Stuart monarchs then ruled Scotland for 343 years, and for 111 of these, England too, but apparently we weren't speaking to England at the time, so I don't know how that worked, doesn't say. Have you heard of the Old Alliance? Well, that's where Scotland is a bit pally with France, because they weren't speaking to England either. It's all a bit playground stuff, this. I'm not speaking to Jimmy, but I'm speaking to George. I'll be your best friend if you don't speak to Jimmy. Robert the Bruce invented the Old Alliance. Move forward to 1406, and Robert III, who was old, and he feared for the safety of his 12-year-old boy, James. So he sent him to France to safety, but he never actually made it, because he was kidnapped by the English. His father died when he heard the news. That's a shame. And James was made to stay kidnapped in England until he was 30, and then sent home to be crowned with, get this bit, a bill of £40,000 for his hotel. Well, his sort of board and lodgings. Cheeky so-and-sos. I mean, I'm going to kidnap you, and then I'm going to charge you for kidnapping you. Mind you, I think James got his own back because he executed his opponents and cleared up all the confusion, and then he re-established the efficiency of Parliament. But I think we need you back, James, because it's a mess again. And then, sadly, he was stabbed to death taking a Christmas break to a monastery in Perth. So he had a bit of a hard shift, didn't he? Poor soul. So we have a few Jameses to come in the future, and I'll go on to them next, and then the monarchy seems to get a bit more familiar to me. So I've done all the Margarets, and now we're going on to go on to the Jameses. And now I'll take to the collective. Textile artists. So our study in Luchador is continuing. We've had all our bits that we've had painted or dyed, and we're carrying on with them, finding out a bit more about how the material is behaving. So I have my pieces with the dispersed dyes ironed onto them. And I know I want to make a tree in a desert, like the Joshua Tree album cover. So I took along my soldering iron and attacked some Avalon that I had bond waved onto the back of it already. I left the paper on the back, so with a soldering iron I tried to cut out tree branch shapes. It was a pink piece of Avalon material, and I coloured then over it with black fabric paint to make it a bit more interesting. But I have a top tip for soldering anything. Take a piece of wood or glass tile along with you that you don't mind burning. Because I forgot, and it was actually quite difficult to solder through while holding it up, trying not to touch anything. Oh, and watch specifically that you don't melt the electrical cable that the soldering iron is attached to. So if you touch the wee end of the soldering iron to the cable, because that's very dangerous. And no, I didn't completely melt it. I did catch it just a wee bit. But I think it's because I wasn't working on a thing right in front of me, and the cable then was constantly out the way. Top tip. Safety. Think safety first. I then ironed onto the wee bitties of tree-shaped branches, because they were wee bitties, onto my piece. And then it looks like seaweed, which I'll take. I don't mind. I've now got a sea scene. It's almost Joshua Tree in the sea. Not really. But then it gives me plenty of scope to put fishes into it. So we'll take the happy accident and we'll just change it. Dorothy was actually stenciling a seascape onto her piece. Shirley had painted hers and then was dabbing the excess off with kitchen roll, and there was a bit of a bobbly texture, and it left a wee pattern on the piece, which was, like I say, a happy accident. And we all liked it because it means we can all do it, and it's kind of free, no special stamp required. She did have some Celtic stamps on too, and then she was starting to add some beads, and it was a bonny blue aqua colour. Celia had a larger piece than A4, and she had painted it brown, and then she added some skeleton leaves, and then some green painted Avalon cut leaf shapes using PVA glue. I'm telling you, it's all cut and stick with us. Nothing special, it's just cut, stick, woohoo, colour in. Helen had painted her pieces a bonny purple, and then gone over both the Avalon piece and the Luchador piece with the same stamps, and I think she'd screen printed and she'd cut out carefully from the Luchador, and she was then sewing it over onto the Avalon. The Luchador is see-through, so it gave it sort of a lustre and a depth, which was pretty. And we're to carry on doing this for next time, but I have to tell you, because my darling little Bernie Daisy is growing, she's starting nursery on the 9th of May, but it's a Monday afternoon and it clashes completely with my textile artists. So the 2nd of May will kind of be my last session. Hubby has offered the odd Monday afternoon, but we can't commit properly due to work, because we never know what's going from one week to the next, and although it's great for business, it's hard when you want to do textile artists. I'm not going to stop talking to you about it, because I've still got a lot to learn, and I'll pass on, and I'm going to Caithness Quilters to try and fill the gap up where my textile artist friends are. I'm sad, because I knew that after the summer holidays when Sandy started school that I wouldn't be able to do it. He gets home at 3:30, text alerts is 2 to 4, and I'd have to leave at 3 because it takes half an hour, you know, the logistics. And I'd just get there an hour and it really just wouldn't be worth it. So, last session soon. Sniff. Sad. Very sad. Femto Craft Group was good. We made lip balm, a la I Make Podcast. Rachel was very kind and organised the buying of all the stuff required. I'm not going to go through it bit by bit because Martin has already done this and has a very fine tutorial which we followed and point you in her direction. If you Google I Make lip balm tutorial, it'll take you straight there. Thank you to Martin from I Make Podcast for giving this and many more ideas. But it is so easy. One thing, Rachel, you got almond oil. Sarah and I are allergic to almond oil. I didn't say at the time because I didn't like to after you going to all the bother of organising it. And I forgot that we could have used olive oil, which I had. I thought, if we don't do the almond oil, we won't be able to make it. And I know I tried it, and you're all looking at me going, she tried that. But my mouth was quite itchy, and what was the point of killing yourself for lip balm? So this leads me to a new competition. I have 2 wee pots of lip balm needing a new home. They are not nut-free, so don't enter if you are allergic. But, like the last competition, put a message onto the Ravelry group saying, pick me, pick me. And Sandy and I can do another raffle. So I'll do the draw on the 6th of May. But it was good fun and I recommend it. Really easy. Really easy. And it's lovely. We had our smelling of bergamot. And when I did use it, the actual lip balm, it was nice and soft and my lips were soft. It was just my mouth that was quite itchy. So, anyway. Oh, and myself, well, it is the Me 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 Show. I'd like to point out, I am being sarcastic when I say it is the Me 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 Show. Right, okay. I was mostly at the podcast workshop and plugging away at the cardigan and the glove. And I know I would say I would do one at a time. Well, the reason I haven't is because I couldn't concentrate enough to do the hat, the brioche hat, or the glove. So I went to the cardigan. And I have finished one of the fingerless gloves. And yes, I have been wearing it like Michael Jackson, the one-gloved wonder. Shamoon! And I'm now 9 centimetres up the next one. I will get these made before summer. But I didn't make it to spinning. I did sort out that pink fibre that I was mulling about. I very badly Navajo-plied it and it was like rope. But it was poor fibre in the first place. And the single ply wasn't very good. And I didn't expect it to make anything good. But I did think about doing the white felting oven gloves and at the time I couldn't find the net curtain. I know it's up there somewhere. I know where the bubble wrap is and the soap, but I'll have to go digging for the net curtain. I will do it soon and report back. So I kind of got to the spinning bug again, even though I hadn't been. So I sorted out some bonny fibre that I had upstairs, and thanks to Coggy's advice and some from Anne at Spinning, who was talking about how to split it to someone else, I kind of bought it in, and I managed to split the fibre up to spin up, and it's come out beautiful. I'd say it was about bulky weight, and because I never actually measured how many wraps per inch there was, but I did measure how long it was, and there was 84 metres from about 80 grams. And I know it was 80 grams because I used my digital scales. I then split it into 240 grams, which I plied, and I had 10 centimetres on one on the left bobbin left after running out of the right. I was just so chuffed at myself. Thought, that's cool. I had fun with the setting of the twist and wedding whacking it, which is, I understand it, hitting the floor with it. And to set the twist, but I still think it sounds like a men's magazine name. You can have it if you want it. I've taken photos and craft-fairied it to Sarah, who's just going to look at it for a while. I've been carrying on with the drop spindling as I go past. It's Cornish wool, I hadn't told you that. And it's just white, but I thought I could Kool-Aid this when I have enough. No idea what I'm going to do with it, but I like colouring things. I've also earmarked my brown-red hand-dyed that I coloured a wee while ago, and I am definitely going to make it into Elizabeth Zimmerman pie shawl. And any of this yarn that is left over has been craft-fairied to my mum, because she admired it. And I've made it a few times in my head. Do you do that? The amount of time that you spend thinking about it is sometimes more time than you actually use to make it. I think it's the anticipation and the sowing the seed. So I hope you have lots of plackets of seeds to plant up. Thank you for listening. I do appreciate it. If you want to contact me, please do so on Ravelry as Louise J. Hunt or Stitching Fingers as Louise Hunt or Caithness Craft Collective at gmail podbean.com or leave a comment on the Podbean webpage. You can get me on iTunes, you could even leave a review if you'd like, or on www.caithenscraftcollective.podbean.com. I am on Twitter as Caithenscraft, come give me cheek. I'm on Nitty as Caithenscraft, and nobody speaks to me on there. All the links are in the show notes, so go there to click anything that you'd like more information on. And this week, the music is Wild Mountain Time by Mark Gunn. From www.musicgalley.com, playing us in and out as the House Martins are back. And he so beautifully sings, Summertime is Coming. So goodbye, the geese. Cheers for listening and keep on crafting. All around,
will you go? I say go. Will you go? I say go. We go.